This is ESPN 1000, WMVP WSHE HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
Now, back to more Waddle and Sylvie, live from the Old National Bank State Street Studio.
On Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
Thanks for listening, calling, and participating in today's shows. Thanks for being in the Twitch chat. Thanks to Connor for doing McKnight at the Movies. Thank you to Black and Abdallah. It is time for Crosstalk, brought to you by Club Hawthorne. Put a little more action into your weekend at one of Hawthorne's 16 newly remodeled betting bars, or bet the races from home or on the go with the Club Hawthorne mobile wagering app. Sylvie's off the rest of the week. Pat Boyle's here. We haven't seen him in a while.
Look at this poor guy.
We haven't seen
him. It's like they sent you to the gulag in Siberia, and they finally let you out.
There's poor been Patty. Some things happening at 9201 West Madison. Not going to lie to you.
Welcome back, kid. Welcome back.
Listen, it was a here. Fun run, Patty. I mean, it was a hell of a run.
Toughest job in Chicago sports media.
After being the easiest job in Chicago media.
From 2008 to about 2016.
Yeah.
Piece of cake.
It was a fun job.
It was a fun job.
Well, that's the way you got to look at it. It was an incredible run.
Tremendous.
You still get to talk about hockey for a living, which is good.
I mean,
hockey's a great sport.
I do the same. I love it. I love talking hockey for a living over here on this microphone.
Well, like, listening on the way in, and you were, you know, lamenting of where you're at with the White Sox, and you're watching the Padres, and you have this jealousy. I was saying to Tommy upstairs in our meeting, you know, I've been in Chicago now 20 years. And there's always been a team in Chicago that's been carrying the playoff or the championship mantle. You know, like 03, you know, you had Cubs. 05, the Sox win it all.
07, they were in the playoffs.
Bears in 06 go to the Super Bowl. Yeah. You know, 2010 starts the Magic Blackhawks run. Yep. Some of the Tibbs teams were fun to watch. At least they got in the playoffs and would win a series or two. It was the White Sox turn. And it's just been...
That's a good way to describe it.
That's it.
Yeah.
Now, the amazing thing is that, like, as badly as they flubbed it, they have the unbelievable fortune of playing in this division where nobody's wanted to run away with it
division
at all.
And
it's just bad. And, like, I've got two bets on them, and I still think I'm going to win them.
Double down.
Two bets.
One at minus money,
one at plus money.
The Twins actually did some work. They really did. But don't you think the Sox still have a better pitching staff than they do, even though they made some changes?
I think they're better.
Yeah.
Yes, I do.
But they are what they are until they prove that they're not what they have been for the last year.
Now, four of the last five have been good, and you know, like Kopech's velocity being back up was a good sign. Lynn looked great.
He did.
You know, like there's life again on his
Eloy's
hitting
the ball well.
I mentioned that.
Abreu give you a little bit of
Mr. August is starting to heat up.
Eloy's got a 9-game hitting streak, I think.
Yeah. Like, he's hitting 500 since the All-Star break.
He's a 14.5% increase in the last 2 days in his home run production.
Wow, listen.
There's some math for you there.
But the high man's got only 14 home runs.
But you know what?
They're not Fenwick numbers, but hey, there's something.
Of course
he's still dating. Still dating. I mean, we're not, you know, we're not engaged to this team.
No.
Like, you can't commit yourself to this team emotionally.
They're two games over 500 for the first time since the third week of the season. That's not, doesn't reek of championship aspirations.
No, Carl, I would ask you as a diehard Sox fan, when you heard Rick Hahn, what he had to say in the dugout the other day and said, well, we're disappointed like all fans and I'm in a crappy mood. What was your response? Because if you didn't make any moves, maybe it's because your minor league system isn't strong. Well, he's in charge of it.
Yes, they've never been good at developing talent. They just, quite frankly, have not been good at it. They've been terrible at it when you look at their history over the last 25 years of drafting. They finally hit with TA, which is good. That's the first position player that they drafted and developed since Maglio Ordóñez. Maglio came to this organization like in 1994, you guys.
Right.
That's the kind of drought that we're talking about. Jose Abreu does not count. They didn't do a damn thing to develop Jose Abreu. Jose Abreu was a grown-ass man when he came here.
When Rick says to you he's in a crappy mood today...
Well, I don't care what kind of mood Rick's in, quite frankly.
I'm just saying, this is under your purview. This is under your control.
Right, Jose Abreu is 45.
They could have done a lot, whether it was leading up to Tuesday or all throughout the offseason.
They got Ohtani.
You could have went out and signed Jock Peterson. You could have maybe. Why don't you even call Kyle Schwarber? Why don't you even call him? I don't understand it. There are a lot of things they could have done. They could have been more serious about Manny Machado a few years ago. Maybe Manny never would have come here and used them from the get-go. But what if you did sweeten the pot with another $50 or $60 million, which you could have done? You could have had Manny Machado. Yurko's playing stuff on his phone.
Don't worry. You could have had Correa.
You could have. Absolutely, you could have. If you wanted to, if you were serious, and that's not all on Rick because he doesn't sign the check. But if your organization and your owner and the people in charge were determined enough, yes, you could have went to Carlos Correa and said, hey, well, you know, we'll give you 35 for a year. You could have had Carlos Correa. 100% you could have. If you wanted to, now I might not have been as crazy about this, but he's still doing it. You could have had Max Scherzer.
Yeah.
You could have done a lot of things. If you're serious about it ever, for once, like, show us that you are truly serious about it. They go just kind of, maybe more than halfway, but they kind of just go to us, and then it's like, well, this is it. This is the most we're going to do. We're not going to spend any more. We're not going to do That's it. We're going to go
they
to about
tease
here.
You. Like they the Machado you. Thing yes. was a big, big tease, right?
And look at the Padres.
We gave you the best offer. No, you didn't. You were $50 million light.
Exactly. Yeah. And now look at the Padres. That's a team that, for better or worse,
what are they, like the 23rd TV market in the
27th
country?
27th or something. They'll never have anything to show for it. But that's a team that is saying, no, we want it.
Yeah.
We want it. We will spend. Man. We will we'll draft well.
We're going to do
They've got all these prospects that they can trade to keep
do it all
doing
night,
all
day
deals.
And all night. They're going to do
that's
it.
That's it.
Yeah, we're going to do it.
And maybe it gets them nothing at the end of the day. But man, I would. How could you not watch that last night?
And be like, wow, it'd be fun to Carm.
It'd be fun to be a Carm.
He was apathetic, Carm, the White Sox fan last week. But this week, I think watching them lose the opener against the Royals kind of got your marbles hot. Got a little steamy.
And then the
trade deadline comes and goes. Carmen's sitting out there.
Hot marbles.
Yeah. Hot marbles. Yeah. And you watch the Padres and you're like, oh, it'd be fun to be a Padre fan right now.
Yeah.
Living in San Diego, cheering for
but
Juan
you're a
Soto.
White Sox fan.
Fernando Tatis and Manny Machado.
I could use the Padre joke all day long.
All day.
You know, the great thing about
my
the
Padre
White Sox.
Underwear.
My Padre underwear.
Yeah. Great yellow food. In the front, brown in the back.
Exactly. Great food with the White Sox, though. They got great
they
food.
They do have great food.
It's the best thing you can say about the White Sox. Great
they
food.
They brought that from the old Comiskey.
Yeah.
It's
great food.
Good food.
But the Padres, you guys. The Padres.
Yeah, it's.
The Padres.
Yeah, so, Padres.
Good kid. I'm listening to the
I'm
show.
Here.
And you're talking about.
What am I talking about, baby?
The NFL.
Yeah.
The sport we love.
I love you.
It's back tonight,
it's
TV.
Back tonight. Yeah.
Whole world loves it.
Getting hot and bothered. Jacksonville and Vegas.
Yeah. Yeah, but there's no Trevor Lawrence and there's no Travis Etienne Jr.
No Etienne.
I don't care if it's just. You know,
I get you. I
guys
get
running
you.
Around, guys from the stands running around in Jags
That's
and Raiders jerseys.
Guys popping pads. That's what we're going
to
have
were
tonight.
Were you stunned to hear the good kid say he misses the pain?
Yeah, I do.
Of training camp comfort. In the NFL. I was like, I would think that that's the first thing that a retired NFL player says. You know what? I don't miss the Mondays
I know. Do you know what
See,
I miss?
That's why I was going to ask
I
you.
I miss the discomfort.
What I miss was hanging out with all of these immature 25-year-olds. 80 of them up in training camp that separated 3.5 hours from where you live.
Yeah.
Like going to Platteville for 6 weeks was hell.
Oh,
hell on earth. But there was a cool element to it. You were there with like 80 fraternity brothers.
Right, when training camp was training camp.
Yes.
You didn't end it until the Monday before the first week of the NFL season. Not on August 17th. It's over.
It's over.
Let's go home. Let's play patty cake.
They don't even go home. They stay home.
Yes.
They don't go anywhere.
When you reported,
I liked going away for camp.
I did. Johnny, when you reported to St. Thomas Aquinas in South Florida.
Yeah, Northwest
27. And it was 122 degrees. And by the way, your dorm situation there was like a bad
it's terrible.
Motel 6.
Yeah.
I mean, it was
cockroaches all over the place.
And the Dolphins at that time, I mean, it was Marino, it was Duper, it was Clayton. Yeah. I mean, it was a hell of a franchise,
John
but you guys were... I mean, that was a shite show.
Jim Jensen was there. Yeah, it was the worst facility you'd ever find. Our weight room was outdoors covered by tin.
Which is amazing.
It was.
So, track the heat.
When I told you our lockers at Eastern Illinois were better than the lockers with the Miami Dolphins.
What could that be?
They were made out of wood and chicken wire.
What a difference a couple of decades makes. Now the owner's given $100,000 per loss.
Yes, how about this?
Exactly.
He's giving guys $100,000 per loss.
How about this? In 1990s, the first time I met Wade Huizenga.
Waste management.
No, he came in and bought 25%
from
of the stadium.
Oh.
Of Joe Robbie Stadium.
Yep.
So he came in and bought 25% of the stadium. bought the whole stadium, then bought the team.
Mm.
And that's how the Robbie money, you know, when Joe died, they needed cash.
It's kind of like what maybe people think is going to happen here.
Cash. So he got in inexpensively, because if you remember in 95, when they did the expansion, those guys, Carolina and Jacksonville, paid about $180
million. Imagine getting a team for $180 million.
Was Shula the coach?
Can you imagine?
$4 billion.
Was Shula the coach
Miami,
at the time?
Yeah, he was coach.
You know, it's funny. I played in a golf event, and remember Mike Shula, I think, was our tight ends coach up at with the Bears for a couple of years.
During a
Super Bowl weekend, we were down there for something, played golf on Coach Shula's, is it Singer Island? Whatever it was. No, we were playing golf.
Yeah, but right, the steakhouse was right next to the course.
Yes, and afterwards, Don didn't play, but we went over. Mike took us over to his house to say hello to his father. I can't remember being like any more intimidated that I was going to do something wrong. Like I was going to sit down and fart right in front of Coach.
The only reason I survived in the NFL, they cut me. They didn't have a practice squad in 1990, if you remember right, Tommy, because the players were suing the league. Because they were only paying them $1,000 a week.
Oh, so they got rid of it in 90? Because we had it in 89.
In 90, they got rid of it for 4 weeks. Then they realized the coaches were complaining and said, we need to get this taxi squad back. What the hell are you guys talking about?
Right.
They agreed to pay everybody $3,000 a week.
Okay.
Not that much better, but still a little bit better.
Sure. 3 times.
All right, yeah. So we're getting $3,000 a week. They called me back. They were playing Monday night against Oakland. L.A. Raiders, whatever they were at the time. I don't even remember.
Probably L.A.
And Oakland. It was Oakland at the time.
I think so, yeah. If I didn't make Shula laugh, and that's what I did. I made him laugh.
He's a funny guy.
Boom. It's the only reason he kept me around. I swear to God, I made the man laugh. He looked at me. He called me a mullet. And, you know, I took it as a compliment.
Sure.
The fish or the hairdo?
No, the fish. Called me a mullet. And then Sandusky, old coach Sandusky, was at Penn State. Not that one. But that's where he started.
Yeah.
He goes to me. He goes, Yerk, it's not a compliment.
That's awesome.
And I looked at him. He goes, because it's the worst fish they have. They don't eat the mullet.
And
I looked at him. I said, yeah. I said, you know what, though? He named me a fish. He named the fish after me.
Don Shula.
Not a dolphin, a mullet.
No, not a dolphin.
You were a member of the Miami Mullets.
Not a sailfish.
Dolphin's not a fish.
Not a marlin, right? What do you call me?
A mullet.
He had the gumption to think up a fish that I reminded him of. And even though it was the garbage fish of the ocean, he still gave me a nickname.
I thought the catfish was the... Well, that's not in the ocean.
Is the carp the worst? Tommy,
you can smoke the mud vein there.
Disgusting.
Excuse me?
Smoke the mud vein. That's not on my to-do list, Johnny.
Not going to happen.
I don't even like... I didn't even want to catch it on my hook.
In 89, my first year in the league, I was scheduled to make, as an NFL football player, $17,000.
Yeah.
Wow.
$1,000 a week on the practice squad.
God bless.
And fortunately, somebody got hurt, unfortunately.
I got a chance to be activated.
I made $43,000 in 1989.
That feel like the most money in the world.
We were living High on the hog, baby.
Yeah. I made 57 the next year. I didn't know what to do with the money.
Amazing.
What do you do with this
high
money?
High on the hog,
it's
baby.
So much money. What do I do with it?
I got a $4,000 signing bonus. It was like $2,400 afterwards. I didn't know what to do with the cash.
Now
the first salary cap in 1993 was $36.3 million.
And now it's?
$208 million.
30 years later? Say it again.
$208 million.
And rising fast.
And if not for the hiccups of the hiccups of the housing bubble burst in 2009 when you had that banks going and saying, hello, like, I know it's a good night.
Yes.
We're not going to be banks no more.
Right. Not what you want to hear from your bank.
No.
Or
turning off the lights.
Who went down? Lehman Brothers?
Lehman Brothers kicked it off, I believe.
Or because of the pandemic, that thing would probably be at about $240 million
Good call.
So,
by the way, did you see the article that came out, the Sportico article about...
Sportico.
NFL franchise values.
We talked about it the other day, I think.
The Bears found themselves at, what, $5 billion. Again, I mean, this is subjective in a lot of ways. You know, it's worth what someone's willing to pay. But think about several years ago when the Panthers were purchased by David Tepper. I think the purchase price was like $2.2 billion.
Mm.
And then Denver this past year was $4.5 or $4.6 billion, wasn't it?
Was it? I thought it was yes. more. Is that what it was?
No, I think it was 4.6.
I think Bezos will end up paying about $6 billion.
Jeff Bezos?
Yeah, Bezos will pay $6 billion for
will
the Bears.
Will it be the Bears?
Yeah.
No, I think
Yurko seems to know something that he doesn't want to tell us, and he's hearing this.
I would think, you know, there's
I think Yurko's like got some intel. He doesn't quite want to get too down into it, but he's like,
there are
he keeps dropping this hint that Bezos is going to buy the Bears.
There are people that have a right of first refusal.
Yeah, and they can't wait to cash in either.
Right.
Well, yeah, why? Because Bezos money is ridiculous money.
Of course.
You know, and not only that, but those guys with rights of first refusal.
Are Pat Ryan is the guy who's got right of
first refusal. Yes. And then there's another gentleman, too, but there are no spring
chickens.
The guy
from River.
There are no spring chickens by any stretch of the imagination.
Like Andy McKenna, I think, is also in that group that has right of first refusal or has a certain percentage of ownership, and he's 90 or something.
He's 90. These guys all bought in about 25 years ago, thinking at some point it was going to be hasta la bye-bye, la canoche.
Right.
It never happened.
It hasn't happened.
She's going
to outlive them all.
Is Bezos going to buy the Bears before the new stadium in Arlington or after that agreement's been made?
So they can build it.
It
depends.
I find it hard to believe that somebody that's going to come in and invest billions with a B and an S on the end is going to just sit back and let somebody else design that building.
A guy like him.
Yes.
I'd be stunned at that.
And by the way, how are they going to finance it?
He's going to have to buy the team and build it.
Somebody is going to have to help them finance that. I mean, that's a $5 billion project.
That's conversations that are already being had.
Yes.
Where are you getting this? Do you think it's...
Do you reveal your sources?
No,
do
I don't mean that.
Tell me about Dick Versace when you talk to him.
Well, you just outed him now. Now you just outed one of my sources.
I mean, tell me about all
the
guys.
Isn't Dixie gone?
Dixie's no longer with us.
Well, I don't mean for you to say
that. Ron Rothstein, giving Carmen the news. You think I asked about Ron Rothstein?
Are you getting this, you think it's pretty...
do you know Cap's Produce Guy at Whole Foods?
That's not where we're getting it from, right? You're getting it from somewhere good, it
seems
like. I talked
to a Major League Baseball executive the other day, a.k.a. Mindy.
He was right about the Tevin Jenkins thing. I got to tip my cap on that one.
He was.
100%. He would have had to retract that story on Monday because he would have got a phone call from Hallis Hall saying, what in the F are you saying?
He's got it right.
He was on that one.
He's got
sure.
it correct. Yeah, Cap had that. He had it on Monday. We played it. That's not good for the Bears and for Tevin Jenkins. This is another second-round pick.
We asked this question the other day. What's got you more concerned? You know, I mean, it was better, I guess, yesterday up there, the offense. You know, it's very early, and the defense is always ahead of the offense. But it was a poo show, from what I understand, offensively.
You've been a part of the poo show, though.
Every Sunday, out on the lakefront. I was part of the poo. Mm. But you have the offense struggling. You have Roquan on a stationary bike, and you have the Tevin Jenkins issue. Which is the most concerning to you? My answer was Tevin Jenkins, because it's too early to come to any long term conclusion about this offense. And Roquan, I think, will either be signed,
I agree,
or you'll trade him and get something of value for him. The Tevin Jenkins thing, I do too. But the Tevin Jenkins thing, you got a lot invested in him. He's a second round pick.
They've gone through him like water. That doesn't make any sense. They've gone through him.
Hot knife through butter.
They've spent big time draft capital and just disposed of so many of them because of a variety of reasons. Most of them they just couldn't play.
Adam Shaheen.
Kevin White, Leonard Floyd, who yes has done better away from the Bears.
Mitch Trubisky.
Mitch. Potentially now this guy. I mean, Kmet.
Anthony Miller.
They traded up to get Anthony Miller. The one guy that's worked and hit is Roquan, and you got to get something done with him, I would think. And it is troubling that another second round pick, a top 40 pick, right? 39th overall. Is that where they got him?
Yes. And he was projected to be a first round pick, but then some teams kind of backed out on him because he had a back issue in college. You might just be saying goodbye. There's no mystery as to why this team is where they are.
No,
it's that.
That's exactly right.
It's your team is built through the draft or the core of your team, and you have just highlighted why they are struggling.
Stop botching these things. And I hope Ryan Poles can fix it because it's been one disaster after another. What's up on the show, boys?
Well, we'll hear from Justin Fields. We'll talk everything that's going on at Hallis Hall. Get to your White Sox as well. Big Cat will join us at 4 o'clock.
Nice.
Michael Wilbon will drop by at 5 o'clock.
Oh, in studio.
No, not this time. And a slim down Adam Abdallah, I think, will
When I was at Olympia Fields, we used his locker that day.
Yeah, they gave us the guest locker.
Carmen was in his locker.
Wilbon's locker.
Oh, really?
Olympia Fields, yeah.
I took a picture. I sent it to Sylvia. I said, send this to Wilbon. Tell him thanks.
Did you write a note? Tell him that the Bears belong in Arlington?
I didn't. I probably should have.
I used his soap and washed my undercarriage with it.
Put it right back.
Yeah. Thank you, Michael.
Tell Michael I appreciate it.
Waddle and Sylvia are next. We'll see you tomorrow to wrap
Irish
the week.
Spring, by the
Have
way.
A good day.
You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie.
ESPN 1000 and now on FM at 100.3 HD2.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
The hockey talk coming your way. It's good time. Patty Boyle is in for Sylvie. The Waddle and Sylvie show is ready to rumble.
This is the second time you've been around a Boyle this week, right?
That's right. I got one on my back. It's covered up right now. I'll show it to you at one of the breaks.
You know what? I'll pass
we
on
call
that.
It a, we can call it a Boyle. The medical term for it is an abscess.
Abscess.
Actually makes it sound less filthy.
Well, I tell you what. You guys were talking about it the other day.
I can show you an old picture of it.
No, that's okay.
Yeah, come on. Come on. That's you got to okay. see it. No. Here, I can show it to you. I'm not going to show it to the camera because I wouldn't do that.
Oh, jeez. Oh, my God, sweet Jesus. That is... Does that have a heartbeat?
Oh, I saw it.
Does that have a heartbeat?
I'm just telling you, it hurts so bad. It's like...
Oh, my.
It'd be like when you... Like when something is so swollen, it is pressing against the skin, and it was just awful. But anyway, so Pat Boyle.
Let's talk about the Bears.
That's B-O-Y-L-E, not B-O-I-L.
Correct.
Good time. Patty Boyle is in for Sylvie. Lots of football conversation. No practice today up at Hallett's Hall. And we had an award-winning show yesterday, didn't we, Tyler? A whole five-minute show.
Oh, yeah, we submitted that
one. After the White Sox game, they were delayed by... some heavy rains. But then played fast.
I jinxed you. We were texting, and I was like, oh, it doesn't look like you're going to have a show. And
yeah, I was getting ready to go to the hardware store for something and then had to rearrange my schedule. But, yeah, award-winning show there. We were on for 5 minutes. No drill bits. Some nuts and bolts. Yeah, that's what I had to do. I get some nuts and bolts. That's what I was looking forward to.
We got screwed.
Pretty much, if you're a Chicago sports fan these days, yes, that's the chant that you can start. Yesterday we kind of briefly mentioned there was some football news. The Bears offense did, I guess, perform a little bit better. That's what all the people that are covering the team said, that after a day where they looked horrible, that they showed some improvement. Peggy on Twitter yesterday did confirm with a couple of sources that Tevin Jenkins is, in fact, being shopped by the Bears, and he is there working with trainers. He's not hurt. He fell out of favor with this team, and they're looking to, they're looking for a divorce here, which is sad in a lot of ways. But look, if you can't find common ground, I said this about, and he's a tackle, and he's a second round pick, and it's his second year. But this is a mistake that I think some organizations make, PB. Like when you lose faith in a player, you got to move on. It's what I said about the Rams when they decided to trade Jared Goff and trade for Matthew Stafford. As soon as, and I know that Jared Goff was part of that team, helped take them to the Super Bowl. But once Sean McVay lost faith in Jared Goff being his guy, you can't sit around and pretend that that relationship can still provide positive things. So you've got to stick and move. And I kind of feel that way about the Tevin Jenkins issue. If you can't find common ground, you can't trust him. He doesn't feel he can trust you, despite the fact that he was a second-round pick last year. He's not your guy. He's your team. He's on your team, but you didn't select him. I don't have a problem with them moving on from him.
Well, then move on. This, to me, sounds like it happened during OTAs or the offseason before training camp started, right? And the thing that is weird for Bears fans is, you know, you hear Olin Krutz say that Jenkins is the most talented or could be the most talented offensive
but
lineman
Olin would
on
know
the roster.
Better than right. us about
I'm going to trust his his opinion over mine.
Yeah.
And then you look at the back injury that he had, the fact that he only played in six games as a rookie and I think 150 or 160 snaps. What is his trade value?
Don't know.
Like it's not high.
It's not a lie.
It's the lowest it's ever going to be right now.
Yeah.
So my thought would be, if you're trying to move on from him, he wouldn't be the first disgruntled NFL player in a locker room. And but he is an asset until he's gone. I would try to get him out there, get some tape, maybe play him in the first preseason.
Sounds like he's refusing to practice, though. I don't know that to be the case, but listen, I'd like for somebody up there to kind of clarify what the story is as to why he's not out there.
Don't believe everything you read. Right. So that clarifies everything.
So, listen, this is all speculation. I would speculate that, as you mentioned, PB, during the mini camps and all the other stuff, maybe he didn't like the fact that he wasn't just slotted in a spot, wasn't given a spot.
Well, too bad.
And when they drafted Braxton Jones, they immediately put him, the rookie, the fifth-round pick at left tackle, and I think they moved Larry Borum over to the right. I mean, maybe he got his feelings hurt on that. I have no idea what it is, but at this point, to me, as I was talking to Carmen the Good Kid and we were in crosstalk, this to me is at this point, the thing that's bothering me most about what's going on early in training camp with the Bears. The offensive woes, yes, they're concerning, but it's so early in camp. Like, they're rotating offensive linemen. Justin's getting used to a new offense. There's a new group of receivers. The hope is that over the course of time, you'll show some improvement. But Tevin Jenkins, a second-round pick who you were expecting to be an anchor at either right or left tackle last year, looks like he's on his way out. That to me is that may be a defining moment in 2022, that this year is just going to be a hot mess.
And so you might get a conditional fifth or sixth rounder for him. I don't know. But the defining thing we were going to look at in the 2022 season was the development of Justin Fields.
Yeah.
And we know that goes hand in hand with the offensive line in front of him. Yesterday, it was a better day, you would say, for the offense, better than the first two that got off to a really slow start. And reports said that, you know, the Fields had been late with the ball. Receivers had been open, but the passes weren't thrown. This was an issue last year, Tommy, of Justin holding on to the ball too long. My question to you is, can that be coached out of him?
I think it can improve, sure. Yeah. Listen, I said this last year, and everyone, we live in this world where we want immediate satisfaction and gratification right away. Justin's got to start. He's the better player. Well, how do you know? You haven't even seen him in camp. He's got more physical skills than Andy Dalton. But getting acclimated to the NFL game coming from the collegiate game, it does take some time. And the style, people I talk to, the style they played at Ohio State, he was phenomenally talented. But it's different. You're standing behind an offensive line. You may have 4.5 seconds to throw it. You're waiting for these deep routes with these outstanding athletes out on the edge, wide receivers, to run your post-dig combination. You give him 4 seconds, and Chris Olave is going to get behind the safety.
Yeah.
And then you throw it up middle of the goalpost and let Chris Olave go get it. Look, his deep ball accuracy is fantastic. His natural skill set is fantastic. But that game doesn't exist in the NFL.
Right.
You can't stay. And I think his sack totals at Ohio State were pretty high as well. But they lived with it because this is, I mean, they were a prolific offense because they could hit a home run from anywhere on the field. You get to the NFL and you can't sit back there and pat the ball for 4 seconds and think that your wide receiver is going to get behind Harrison Smith. It just, the level of play is significantly better. So now you have to start being willing. I think Justin talked about it in you know, the last day or two. Sometimes you just have to be content with taking a check down. And you just have to go through the process of learning how to, you know, to read high to low, and in some instances read low to high, and know where to shift to your right, to your left. Look, they were having to reset his footwork. And that tells you that they're going through a total rewiring process with him. Which is fine. I look at this season for Justin almost like his rookie season. So I just, like, I know the thought was is that he was going to be able to step in immediately and be a difference maker. That's hard for any rookie to do, especially at that position when you're not a prolific offense to begin with. And by the way, the offensive coaching staff hasn't really proven to you that they are an average group. So he was thrust into a difficult situation. But I think many people believed that this was still going to take some time because he's got to get acclimated to an offense and a speed of the game that that just wasn't part of the you know, the playbook at Ohio State. He can do it, and I think that he'll make progress. That's a hard leap for a young quarterback, especially when you get different voices in your room and you really don't trust a lot of what you're hearing.
So Justin Fields was asked yesterday about the outside criticism that this Bears offense has taken over the last few days as they get just a couple of practices with pads under their belts.
I mean, they're not playing, so, I mean, it doesn't really matter. They're not helping us win, so no. It's really no.
But you see progress where maybe others might not, you know, because it does, you know.
I mean, we know, the thing is, we know our offense, we know the plays, we know what's supposed to be going on, but, I mean, it's hard to have an opinion on something when you don't really know what's going on inside when you're just looking at it from an outside view, so, I mean, yeah, it's stuff like that. But, of course, you know, they want to see big plays, this and that. But, you know, we're playing situational football. We're, you know, third and four. We're getting the first down. We're not worried about a touchdown at the moment. We're trying to get the first down first. And if a touchdown comes out of it, then, yeah, that's what it is. But, you know, it's, I mean, that's why you really can't, you know, take their opinions into account, which, I mean, you know, they're entitled to have their opinion. But at the end of the day, like, they don't know what's going on.
Your thoughts on Justin talking about the fans and their criticism?
Obviously, he's a bit defensive about it. I look, this is part of the game these days. There's access. There's, you know, people are out there tweeting things that they see. There's going to be criticism. That's the upside is when you're good and things are going well, everybody loves you. There's millions of dollars to be made. There are people that want to put you on a pedestal. And you, when you do your job in the public eye, the downside is when you're going through growing pains, there's going to be criticism. Usually the pendulum swings too hard in each direction. Usually when you're good, you're not as good as everybody wants to tell you. And when you're bad, you're probably not as bad as everybody wants to tell you. And the truth lies somewhere in the middle. He's right that people sitting in the stands watching practice have no idea what the route combination is. They probably don't know what the protection call is. He's right about that. Whether or not it's in his best interest to vocalize that, I mean, like, if he's comfortable saying that, look, you know what, you guys don't know what you're talking about, that's on him. That's his burden.
Yeah.
You know, you do put a bit of a target on your back, a bigger target, when you're willing to be critical of those that are being critical of you. But I've always said, and I don't have a problem with it, I've always said, if you're willing to boo somebody, don't get all, you know, red-assed and sensitive when that person that you're booing boos back.
Yes.
So, like, if Justin wants to boo back at people that don't know what the route combos are and what the play's intended to do in a practice, that's on him. It's just, you know, that you ratchet up a little bit of the pressure. Look, I'm sure there's some frustration up there early on because they all want things to look a little bit better and a little bit cleaner than they've looked so far.
You mentioned the frustrations. Here is Justin Fields on dealing with those early frustrations.
I mean, it's going to come, but I mean, my competitive nature, I think everybody on the offensive side of the ball is competitive nature. I mean, you're going to want to, you know, be successful every day. But, you want to have a successful play every play, but you also got to know when to take your wins and losses. And I think that's one thing, you know, I need to do a better job this year is when the play's not there, you know, throw the ball away or, you know, check it down. So that's one big thing that, you know, I have to get used to because I feel like, you know, in college, it's just like, I mean, you have pretty good players around me. And, I mean, we're in the league now, so the defense gets paid, too, to make plays. But, yeah, when the play's not there, just, you know, move on to the next play and get on the next play.
That's progress. That's already progress.
Right.
And he basically referenced what I was saying earlier. When I'm at Ohio State, I've got Chris Olave, and there was another first-round draft pick whose name escapes me right now. But your talent inside your offensive huddle was significantly better than the opponent 9 times out of 10.
Absolutely.
Now you come to the NFL, and even especially with this offense, with the limited skill players that he had, that's not the case anymore. So things have to change. I'll say this, Pat. Like, look, when the sack totals go down and the ones that are quarterback induced because he isn't feeling where the pressure is coming from or he's not reading the protection coverage right or he's holding on to the ball too long or the fumbles, when those go away, that's when the progress you'll be able to see. And that's where I think that, you know, get rid of all of the – well, you may not throw for 4,500 yards and 35 touchdowns this year, and this offense may rank 20th out of 32 teams instead of 12th. you can make progress by eliminating a lot of these self-induced mistakes. You know, shooting yourself in the foot because you didn't do something the correct way. The explosiveness may not be there, but you can clean up some things that ultimately will lead to progress.
Look, this isn't Ohio State anymore, and you brought it up. Just like the talent level he was surrounded at in Columbus was appreciably better than the talent. Now, I'm not saying obviously NFL talent is better than Big Ten talent, but I'm saying at the collegiate level, Ohio State is a top four program in the nation and produces first and second and third rounders left and right. And like you said, when they line up on Saturdays, nine times out of 10, he was on the roster that was better than the opponent. That is not the case now in the NFL. While they're better athletes, their level of talent is not the best in the National Football League, and it's among the bottom third, if not lower.
And that's why you've got to change your approach a little bit and start working more on some of your fundamentals. Because, right, you're not guiding the Kansas City Chiefs offense. You're not guiding, the Las Vegas Raiders. You are the quarterback of a team that is in the process of a complete rebuild, that is still trying to find its way with their five-man collection of offensive linemen and trying to develop some guys on the edge and a tight end that you can count on for some bigger plays. So this is why I've said from the very beginning, I understand the criticism that is being thrust at Ryan Poles and the Bears front office for not giving Justin enough. And there are a lot of people that believe you're ruining him because you didn't give him enough. I think they've tried to do their best to patch together an offensive line that is significantly better than last year. He will be better in the pocket just from learning and being coached up by Luke Getsy. And some of his offensive players are going to have to elevate their game. But you can make progress just by doing the little things better and eliminating some of these catastrophic mistakes that we saw pretty consistently on Sundays. So, look, that's why I said that I'm not that overly bothered by the news that the offense is really struggling so far in camp. Yesterday was a much better day because they've got so much time to get ready. And there are so many changes, and he's learning a new system. That's why I said the other day, too, that outside of the roster guys on the roster, Luke Getsy, to me, is the most important guy, non-player in the building.
I agree with that.
Short term. Ryan Poles ultimately is in charge. But for this, the here and the now, like the most important guy to me over the next several months of the season is Luke Getsy. Can you get Justin Fields in a position consistently to take advantage of what he does well? Don't throw him down a flight of stairs with the game plan.
Yeah, don't send him to Cleveland. Yeah, yes. Absolutely.
And I think that if you can do that, you can make progress even though you still aren't whole with regard to what your offensive huddle needs to look like.
Coming up, how Matt Eberflus is the anti-Matt Nagy, at least when it comes to preseason. We'll get into that. Your phone calls as well. 312-332-3776. It's Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000.
You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
Follow at Waddle and Sylvie and at TWaddle87 on Twitter.
How many times did you play this in your cassette player back in East Lansing?
Yeah, this probably was two. Right
in college,
the,
isn't it? College
oh, this
town?
Is college, yeah. This is 1990-ish.
Yeah? What did you get out of Michigan State?
I got out of 91. Did my time.
Did your time.
And I got out of there.
Oh, you know what? I got out in 89, and I'm about to send my youngest back to school in 2 weeks.
Well, we're in the same boat.
I paid her first tuition bill today.
And we did, too. It's funny how that...
I got to tell you, it was more painful than having this abscess lanced 2 days ago. It's just ridiculous.
Well, I tell you, by the way, it's Waddle and Sylvie, Pat Boyle, and for Mark Silverman today.
Who's in Nashville having quite the time.
Isn't that interesting?
I was texting with him earlier, and he says he said something to the effect of, we got to make this a yearly destination.
He used to laugh at us going to Chris Stapleton or some of, Joe's on Weed because both you and I are into country music, yes, and so are our wives.
Yeah.
And now Sylvie, I wouldn't be surprised if he comes back with a pair of Wranglers and some boots from Nashville.
Yeah, I would hope he'd get himself a good cowboy hat and some boots. And there are some great boot stores there.
Is he going to see Jay Cutler while he's there?
I don't think so. He said he wasn't going to bother him, but
he likes to bother people.
There's no doubt he texted Jay at some
point.
By the way, it takes two. Rob Bass and DJ Easy Rock.
Yeah,
that song was released June 1st of 1988.
Okay, so
yeah, I mean it was total.
Yeah,
total
it was being played at my fraternity house back in the day. But we'll talk later about. You're sending off your fourth and final daughter to college in a few weeks. I'm sending my first. Yerk is taking his daughter to Purdue in a couple of
weeks.
That
is correct.
I'm going through some things.
Are you?
Yeah, I am.
So, are you bothered? Are you concerned? Are you nervous?
I'm melancholy a little bit. Oh. I'm a little sad. Little sad.
Well, think about. I mean, I'm with you, and I can understand.
Maybe it's the sports in Chicago that's also affecting me.
That could be it.
That could be it too.
It could be the. Well, I was going to take a cheap shot with a team that you cover, but I won't. But think about me. Like we're, and thankfully, my wife and I have a great relationship and enjoy spending time together. But it's going to get a whole lot more lonely and quiet in the house.
So, yeah.
Like, we've never had for the last 29 years. My oldest is 29. We've never not had a child in the house for the last 3 decades.
Well, the good thing about your daughters is they do come back and visit.
They do. And
hang out for long stretches of time. So maybe they'll fill the void a little bit there.
I hope so.
I'm sensing a lot of tennis camps in Kara's future.
There is definitely one that she's... By the way, she qualified her tennis team for state. Yes,
your wife's tennis team qualified for state.
Hold on. What does that mean?
There's an adult state?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. You make fun of them and you may get your ass kicked. Yeah. Yeah, they qualified for a state championship. Now they got to go through the process of all the playoffs.
And when does that begin?
I believe this weekend is... She plays on two teams. I think that if she wins this weekend with the other team, they qualify for... She may be going to state twice.
We're going to get the run for a segment.
Yeah.
To talk about. So, wait, do they then go to different clubs to play each other? Or is there like, you know,
she's already made reservations down in Champaign for they play.
Really?
They play downstate.
Oh, they're going downstate.
They're going downstate.
It's going to be on TV.
She's already got her hotel room.
Wow. All right.
Yeah.
Well, way to go, Kara.
Yeah. So.
Let's squeeze in Eddie on the north side as we get back to the Bears conversation. And by the way, our training camp coverage is brought to you by your Chicagoland Midas franchisees. What do you have to say, Eddie? How you doing today?
All right. How you boys doing? Well, I agree with you. I mean, like, it's even the current quarterback at Ohio State right now. Look at his stats. It's unbelievable. It's like you can throw anybody at Ohio State. But if Justin Fields now realizes what he was so gifted at Ohio State, and it's a whole new different ball game when he gets to the NFL, I think like guys that like Patrick Mahomes and the colleges they go to, they have to work so much harder at them colleges because they don't have all them great talent wrapped up around them, and they seem like they're better when they come to the NFL.
But Eddie, first of all, when I say that about the difference between Ohio State and then playing in the NFL, I'm not trying to be negative. It's not a shot at Justin. It's just that the transition period is fairly significant because the style that they play at Ohio State and the talent that's in that huddle, he doesn't have the natural built-in advantage every time they line up against an opponent in the NFL. It's just different. And the style of offense that most NFL teams run, significantly different than what Ohio State was doing. But like when you reference other college quarterbacks, they are in different situations. It depends who you are. The NFL is now stealing from the college game instead of vice versa.
Right.
And I mean, you talk to people around the league and they'll tell you a lot of the concepts that are being run in different NFL towns now are coming from the collegiate game. So it just depends what system guys are coming out of, how quickly they get acclimated and how big a jump it is for them to get used to the NFL versus the collegiate game. But I'm not trying to be overly critical of Justin when I say what he saw at Ohio State is different than what he's seeing here. They were running a different style offense. That's why patience is key. It's essential because you got to give this kid an opportunity to get adjusted to playing the game in a different manner. I think you can come to some conclusions about who he is going to be this year. At the end of 17 games, yes, he doesn't have a great offensive cast around him. But at the end of 17 games, I think you're going to be able to make some more definitive statements and come to some more definitive conclusions about who he is 2 years into the league. Let's see if he makes some of those adjustments. Let's see if he adapts to the speed of the game and how things are done here. And I'm optimistic that he will. I just think people, you can't expect, you just pluck a guy from college and automatically you put him in an NFL, you know, uniform, especially in a group that A, didn't protect their quarterback very well, and B, didn't have a ton around him, and C, wasn't coordinated very well, and just immediately think that the success he had at the collegiate level was going to translate here. I mean, again, we live in a society and a world now where we want instant gratification, and I just think that there were too many expectations for him to be great or very, very good way too early.
What will Matt Eberflus do as far as his starters in the preseason? We'll hear from him coming up next. White Sox, a couple games over 500 for the first time since late April.
Whippy!
They take on the Rangers tonight. Connor has the pregame beginning at 6:30. And Jeff Mellor has a conspiracy theory on why Wilson Contreras was not moved at the trade deadline. It's all coming up next. It's Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000.